Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today, we're embarking on the challenges companies face when managing multiple banking relationships and back office systems. The intricacies of global bank connectivity and payment processes are unfolding, shaped by diverse protocols and the integration of multifaceted systems. Today's guests are going to unravel the strategic blueprints necessary for effective bank connectivity and payments implementation. They're also going to dissect crucial considerations, offering profound insights into optimization strategies. A pivotal focus will be on the strategic role played by mapping out workflow variables, which is a meticulous process for identifying areas primed for replacement or optimization. Joining me today to unpack this is John Paquette, Executive Vice President of Solutions and Product Strategy at TIS, and Albert Bodine, Director of Commercial and Enterprise Payments at Javelin Strategy and Research. John, to get us started, what are the common challenges that companies are facing as they expand to manage multiple banking relationships and back office systems?
Yeah, I can speak a little bit about that. So maybe the first thing to sort of highlight here is that when you're dealing with multiple different bank relationships, generally that means multiple different protocols, definitely in these days where it seems like most organizations are looking to start taking advantage of APIs, but also marrying those up with traditional connectivity methods like host-to-host connections or even SWIFT connections. So typically for this, it means that if you're multi-bank, you're probably dealing with multiple different protocols as well and different security keys, encryption keys, things like that to be able to secure those connections. But the complexities kind of layer on top of each other as well, because in addition to just the protocols themselves, maybe even the more complex aspect when it comes to payments is the payment files that are required to actually transact with those banks. So, you know, everything is sort of moving towards a generic sort of ISO XML structure, but different banks, different markets, different payment instruments, there's still different variations of that ISO XML format that organizations need to contemplate. So even if you're getting into, you know, say 6-7 bank relationships, you could be looking at 25 plus different variants of payment formats to be able to manage to actually execute the payments that you need to. And these can include everything from different data elements to, you know, regulatory reporting elements if you're, you know, transacting sort of certain emerging markets, or even like special language characters and things like that in some of the Asian markets and things, right? So this becomes sort of super complex for organizations to manage, and obviously just gets amplified as that bank relationship landscape grows. And then maybe the last concept that sort of really complicates things for a lot of organizations is it's not just the bank connections themselves, it's the systems that need to leverage those bank connections. So if you're a multi-ERP or you have a TMS or a payroll system or some other, you know, payments initiation systems, that figuring out a way to sort of get an efficient model in place allows all those different systems to tap into that connectivity and leverage straight through processing and process automation, things like that. That's just another factor of complexity in sort of managing this whole, you know, web of bank connectivity.
So that's a really interesting angle on this, Jonathan, is we're seeing that corporates that have relationships with non-GSIBs, non-globally systemic important banks, are multiplying their number of banks by, in some cases, twofold, because they realize that those deposits, their deposits may not be insured beyond, you know, the 200,000 level. So until, you know, the regulatory environment changes, this kind of thing becomes really, really, really important, you know, the ability to be able to manage these protocols, interfaces, integrations. So I just found that to be very interesting thing that we really started to see cropping up more and more in the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's interesting, I think, too. Yeah, I mean, people trying to diversify the risk of holding balances with certain banks, that's another factor just causing people's banks' portfolios to just expand and expand. I mean, there are so many reasons why companies are multi-bank anyway, whether it be credit relationship or business operations or, you know, whatever it might be. And that's just another factor that's adding additional complexity. So real good point there.
Jonathan, what are the consequences that companies are facing as a result of not having a strategy in place, you know, managing all of this?
Yeah, I think there are a few real notable ones maybe to point to here. So, you know, just bank connectivity in general, if you think about bank connectivity, it drives so much of process automation within finance, within treasury, right? So yes, you know, fueling payments is one piece of it, and obviously a huge piece of it for organizations putting in place straight through processing. But also that inbound reporting is always sort of used by organizations to automate cash applications, to automate accounting entries and things like that. And obviously treasury is using that data as well to fuel the cash forecast, the cash position and things like that. So, you know, not having a good strategy in place or not having 100% connectivity or really that, you know, multi-system sort of connectivity diagram in place prohibits organizations from really achieving the level of automation that they really want to within their businesses. You know, maybe another one is, you know, lack of visibility and control over, you know, sort of global payments processes. You know, once you sort of put in place, if you don't have a, you know, a unified connectivity strategy and you're looking to put that in place, you know, usually it's tough to see sort of what's happening within each individual little regional finance center or shared service center, whatever it might be. This might be a blind spot for Treasury a lot of the times, not being able to sort of understand how businesses are executing payments or get access to sort of their data and you know, some of the cash flow information that they need on a day-to-day basis. Plus, it's hard to put in place consistent controls if you don't have straight-through processing in place as well to make sure that all of your different subsidiaries are executing payments the same way, which obviously introduces a lot of risk into the payment process. And another one that's becoming a big issue for organizations, I think, you know, now that sort of data management strategies are coming into focus and companies are thinking a lot about how they're, you know, driving their data analytics, is that without sort of a holistic bank connectivity solution, you end up with these data silos. You know, if you're a multi-ERP system, for instance, and you're using different systems in different regions and you're connecting up your banks to those sort of, you know, localized systems, you end up with data kind of trapped within the silos, these localized silos that are driven by the systems that are in use by these regions. You know, so having a more comprehensive, holistic connectivity strategy helps to break down those data silos. And then you can either drive analytics through, you know, a treasury solution or into a data lake or whatever it might be. But companies are thinking a lot about that these days as well. And, you know, maybe the last one to point to is just general lack of scalability. If you don't have a strategy in place for how you're going to manage this, you know, obviously, you know, organizations are always changing, bank relationships are changing, companies are growing either organically or through acquisition, they're moving into new markets. And without a way to know what that's going to look like and put in place, you know, automated processes as you do grow in a really scalable way, brings a lot of confusion, lack of control, lack of visibility, and sort of makes things really sort of chaotic for finance and trying to sort of manage that growth as things change within the business.
Yeah, it really highlights the importance of also having a fully implemented strategy and not a half-baked one. And you brought up the notion of silos, and we see that. I see that a lot with whether the corporates, whether financial institutions, whoever we're talking about. The half-baked approaches almost never work, and indeed they make things worse in my estimation. So good point, Jonathan.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's a lot of companies who don't have a strategy in place for this sort of shoot for, you know, the big targets, the main cash management banks, trying to get the high volumes onto an automated process, and then forget about all the outliers just because there's too much complexity there to really be able to manage that. And that leads to these partial implementations, which, you know, obviously don't serve the organization the way that they intended when they kicked the project off.
You spoke about the challenges as well as the consequences. Let's shift to like some best practices that should be like top of mind. Are there any strategies in place for implementing bank connectivity and payments effectively?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some factors of it probably depend on your complexity. You know, obviously, if you have a single bank strategy, then the way that you're going to handle bank connectivity might differ from an organization with multiple different bank relationships operating globally. But of course, that's not particularly common these days. It seems like even simple, you know, domestic businesses have multiple bank relationships. So there's already, you know, that complexity tends to build pretty quickly, even like we talked about before, six or seven banks, considering formats and connectivity protocols. There's a lot of complexity there already, you know, and I guess it also depends on your in-house resources. You know, some organizations might have real strong, you know, IT teams who are great at these topics, great at building formats, can put in place sort of a homegrown connectivity strategy. But that's not always the case either. And there's probably a little bit of a balancing act there as well to sort of think about, is it worth it to manage this in-house, or is there a better bang for the buck to outsource this and focus on something else internally? But, you know, even if you're in that sort of, you know, say if you're, you know, five plus banks, say 5 to 7 banks, there's already enough complexity there to start thinking about having a connectivity strategy using an outsourced specialized provider. So, you know, obviously TIS is one of these providers. But you know, through a strategy like this, you can put in place just a centralized connectivity hub where the provider is connecting up to your different bank relationships in a multi-protocol fashion. So like we talked about before, if you have a mix of protocols like APIs and host-to-host connections, all those connect into that centralized hub. And that gives your business, you know, just one point of entry into their bank relationships. So if you're hooking ERP systems, payroll systems, TMSs into it, it's just one connection to that hub that gives you access to your entire bank portfolio versus thinking about each individual connection and managing those back and forth from each one of those systems. So, you know, we find that this really becomes a really effective strategy. And, you know, even the complexity variables probably aren't limited to just banks. That's sort of bank relationships is just one variable there. But, you know, if you're multi-system, those complexities build just as quickly, right? So say you only have 2-3 bank relationships, but you have, you know, 10 plus ERP systems or back office systems that need to connect up to those 2-3 bank relationships. You have the same sort of equation there where that complexity builds super quick. So that's something to think about too, in terms of deciding if, you know, a strategy like this is right for you. You know, also just the makeup of the organization. If you have a, you know, sort of a decentralized finance structure, some regional shared service centers that are operations that are sort of operating autonomously, how are you going to sort of get visibility into those processes and unify that globally to be able to, you know, standardize those processes, control those processes, and break down those data silos like we talked about before. So I think organizational complexity is probably another variable that leads nicely into your decision to sort of pursue a strategy like this. And I think, you know, your need for scalability. So, you know, like I mentioned before, these bank projects are never just one and done. It's never connected up to all your bank relationships and then projects finish. Companies are always changing over time, switching out bank relationships, acquiring companies, growing, whatever it might be. So depending, but I guess different businesses sort of have different degrees of that. Some are, you know, very acquisitive, growing very, very quickly and always changing, others less so. But, you know, the need for that scalability in the context of your business is another big driver to see if it, you know, it makes sense to pursue a strategy like that. And the last, you know, the last factor to probably consider is cost. I mean, I think the cost is sort of understated sometimes when you think about what a homegrown bank connectivity strategy looks like, or even trying to manage that through a system that's not designed for that. There's huge IT maintenance costs, huge internal costs that Treasury doesn't always see, but they're there, they're real. And, you know, it makes the business case really obvious for a specialized solution in that case too.
So I covered this in some recent research, Jonathan, a paper on partner buyer build. And this particular area is one that I would go all in on, saying you have to partner with external organizations that really know what they're doing here. And the example I always like to use is the ISO 20022 protocol, of which, and you and I discussed this the other day, but 6 months ago, there were 40 different implementations. Within the last month, there are now 60 different implementations of this so-called standard. And so it's just one example of why you would not want to do this in-house, in my estimation. You would want to partner with an organization, you know, like TIS or another organization that really knows what they're doing here, because organizations just simply don't have the bandwidth to do this type of thing, in my estimation.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, we're seeing that more and more as the number of format variants grow, as people look to take advantage of the ISO standard. It's obviously been, you know, hugely advantageous to the industry, but there's also a lot of nuanced data requirements in these ISO formats to be able to execute them, or, you know, tap into certain payment instruments and things like that. And through an approach like this, huge simplifications from that standpoint in terms of, you know, once you have that connectivity hub in place, I mentioned it's a single point of entry to the bank portfolio, but you can also send a single payment instruction format into that hub and let, you know, the software itself do the transformations into the ISO variants and pick up all those sort of geographic nuances and things like that. So get the IT team out of that game that you mentioned, where they're constantly maintaining all these variants in-house and they need to constantly update them, you know, over time. So.
Yeah, and just one other point I'll make, Jonathan, you brought it up right there, is that most of the time being spent by internal IT staffs is on maintenance and, you know, maintaining existing infrastructure is not, unfortunately, I guess in some cases, not building new tech stacks and the like. But yeah, it's definitely a resource challenge and one that should be looked at for partnering.
As we come to an end, Jonathan, do you have any suggestions for companies who are looking to gain a complete picture of their payments and making processes for optimization? And to add to that, you know, what role does mapping out workflow variables play in identifying areas for replacement or optimization?
Yeah, I think it plays a big role, and I could probably give a couple suggestions for organizations who are looking to undertake a, you know, payments transformation or to sort of optimize these processes. I think first is to understand, is there a global process owner for payments? You know, like commonly this didn't exist. It was sort of like Treasury was the gatekeeper to the banks, but AP managed their own payments process. Same with payroll. Treasury wasn't doing much besides just making introductions, kicking off host-to-host projects. But we're seeing more and more Treasury acting as the global business owner of the payments process and really driving within the business how the business is going to make payments, how they're going to connect up to banks, and putting in place, you know, scalable models to be able to fuel future growth and sort of fold it into a real scalable model for payments. So, you know, having that global process owner, I think is definitely key if you're going to optimize your payments processes. The other is, you know, we ask organizations a lot, like, do you really understand all the way that your business makes payments? Do you know all the different ways the payments are going out the door? And more often than not, it's no. So having that mapping, I think, of all the different ways your business is making payments across, say, treasury payments, AP payments, you know, expense reimbursements, payroll, tax payments, whatever it might be, really have a full mapping of how those payments are made, what systems are involved, what geographies, what controls are in place is a key thing too. It's a key starting point if you're really looking to put in place, you know, say a payment subtype software and drive automation and standardization into that process. you mentioned workflows and things like that, which are key. You know, obviously that's one of the big benefits of having a payment hub. So, you know, from that respect, having consistent payment guidelines, having an approval process, right, that's sort of dictated down from the high level, from the treasury level, that you can then sort of adopt within the business. That's key, and that pays dividends when you go to roll out, because obviously you want to bring in those standardized approval processes via workflows through a payment hub, and you got to understand what those are sort of going into the project. You know, another one I'd say is are there gaps in your visibility currently today? Is that something that you're looking to solve for this project? We see that a lot with businesses where, you know, Treasury wants to get more view into what's happening in more regionalized finance centers, either for control purposes or more often than that, not just for cash management purposes, just to know what's happening on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, everybody's managing cash a lot more tightly these days with the environment that we're in, rising interest rates, right? So, you know, that's a key factor as well. And then maybe, you know, just to kind of finish up with two points here. Your system landscape, how many different systems are involved in the payment initiation process. You have to know that, obviously, because it dictates what's going to plug into this payment hub overall. And then, you know, what's the frequency of change and how prepared are you for that? And that kind of harkens back to some of the points I made to about, businesses always changing, always acquiring, always changing bank relationships. And even sort of like that long range kind of like IT roadmap about how those systems are going to change in the future. Is an ERP migration, for instance, on the horizon here? Do you have a strategy in place to be able to facilitate that? Because, you know, payment subs can be really effective in speeding up ERP migrations. But I think as you start to ask yourself these questions, you start to sort of, you know, build out the answers to these questions, it kind of paints a picture for you about how your particular transformation is going to look like and what are the key variables that you want to consider as you implement a technology solution.
Thank you both so much for sharing your insights and your perspectives. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.